I'll tell you, it's kind of difficult being a preacher sometimes. You have people that for all their lives have pretty much heard someone do whatever it is that you're trying to do, and they usually have done it well. And then add in Bible characters and the powerful things that you see there. It's kind of hard to live up to any sort of example. And then I think back to my younger years, and all you heard about were these great older preachers. Sometimes you can even find them online. I found a sermon by Roy Cogdell.
I remember the picture of God that Paul drew concerning the Jews when he said, all the day long, I have extended my hands unto you. But you have been a disobedient and a gainsaying people.
They scared me. They were that intense. They talked to you like that when you were a little boy down there. And but I look to them for inspiration, right? I want to give you some of those old-timey sermons, and I want to go back in time and channel maybe some of the fire and stand that they took for the truth and the gospel. But I don't think they know what to do about what I'm having to deal with today. I heard this week that the Boy Scouts are now letting girls into the Scouts, and I don't know what you call them now, but you struggle to know what to say around topics like this. I can't find them in the sermon archives. People haven't talked about them before, and they haven't had to. You know, for, I don't know, centuries, thousands of years, people have pretty much accepted that there are distinct genders between men and women, and that has not been without its own problems. But today, it's like we're swinging wildly in the other direction, to where now almost anything that has been traditionally normal is now abnormal and under some kind of attack. It's funny, when you think about headlines like this, it isn't that someone would say, well, I don't necessarily think a girl should be in here. You don't have a reason per se to do that, even though we could argue about that back and forth, but you just wonder why. What is at the heart of people's struggle with gender issues today? And what about people today that are like, look, you shouldn't even call a child a boy or a girl. Let them kind of figure that out on their own. What should a Christian do in these things? It's very easy to be painted as a bigot, insensitive, hateful type person. But how are we to take a stand in the 21st century about gender-related things? And the elders had asked me some time ago to preach on a list of topics. This was one of those, and I thought to myself, I'll get to that. And then the Boy Scout thing happened. I was just like, all right, fine. Front and center, Sunday. Let's talk about it. So I titled the lesson, What's the Deal with Your Gender? And I want to do a few things tonight. Number one, I want to take a moment and just reflect from a Bible standpoint where the concept of genders even come from, and then try to paint the picture of God's expectation for your gender today and how we approach some of these things as we move forward as Christians in the 21st century. That's kind of where I want to take things this morning. And for many of you, you may feel like, well, he's saying things that I know. But every year we don't say things that you once knew. Someone else doesn't ever hear it. And so there are parts of things that I fully expect you to be like, yeah, no, that guy would never preach that sermon because he didn't need to, but we need to today. What are your kids hearing at school? What are they seeing in other people? What are they reading or being taught when you're not even around? Right? If we can't take a stand for the truth here because maybe you think we know it, that's how you grow up a generation of people that don't know God. Now, I don't want to do that, right? I want to make sure my kids especially understand this and will deal with it as a Christian should deal with all Bible topics, with love and compassion and humility for our own sins and failings and shortcomings. So we won't try to get too philosophical to try to understand what's at the root cause. We do want to answer some basic questions today through, I think, five slides that we'll share with you. So if you got your Bibles, let's jump back to Genesis and talk about genders in the beginning. I feel like every lesson almost starts with Genesis, but it's funny because that's where you get really the foundation of life and how God had ordered things in general. So we go back there for a lot of things. We go back there for marriage and divorce. You go back there to talk about the marriage relationship, sin. I mean, everything kind of started in the beginning. And the same thing is true with gender. If you go back and read Genesis 1, I mean, God is creating the world. And it says in verse 27 of Genesis 1 that God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Male and female, he created them. One thing I want you to learn from just reading that verse is that there are two distinct genders, neither of which were an accident. One wasn't superior, and then some other kind of gender just came along out of nowhere, or they evolved somehow. God created the concept of genders. One male and one female. And that is true in a number of areas. As a matter of fact, you can go flip over to Genesis chapter 6, and you remember the story of the ark. God is angry with mankind, and he's going to destroy everything that's on the earth with a flood, he says in verse 17. To destroy all flesh, which is in the breath of life, from under heaven, everything that is on the earth shall perish, but I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you, and of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every kind into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. God expects there's two genders. Now you see that here in the beginning. That when God made a helper for man, I feel like I say this all the time at weddings, he didn't make another man. He didn't say, you know, I made a man and he is perfect in every way. He's the height of my creation. He is everything, and so I'm just going to make another Adam. And two robot Adams to do the same thing. And look, why did God do that? Because that's not what man needed. Man already was a man, but he needed a helper suitable to him. And so God fashioned after him someone like him, but very different. God made females. And we see early on, and again, a point that you feel like you don't have to make, but genders are distinct, biological, differentiation. I typed that. I should be able to say it. They're two separate things. And so when you talk about where gender comes from, and we'll restate this at the end of the lesson, a gender is the kind of anatomical, biological makeup that we've identified as such. Now, in another language, it may not be called male or female, and the language that you use to describe it doesn't matter, as long as you can identify the gender. Right? You're a male or you're a female. And that's been true since the beginning. And it's true because God made them that way. Now, it's not just biological in the sense of the physical outsides of a person, right? The insides are different. And when I say the insides, right, just we are made different and to function different. If you're a man and you've ever had trouble understanding a woman, you know, hey, things are different. And if you're a woman and you've ever had trouble understanding a man or why a man doesn't understand you, then you know. Things are different. And so in some sense, we can relate to our own gender better. But as far as being together, we are made to benefit each other. And you make up for my deficiencies, and I make up for yours. And together, we form a strength. And that's true. And that's how God made it. God made everything with a specific purpose. And he didn't just say, well, it doesn't matter. No, God fashioned Eve with the same care he fashioned everything else. And when God was done with everything, man, it was good. I think it's funny, too, when you think about gender, even in the animal kingdom, animals have a role related to their gender. You can go back and you can look at animals and you can study them and identify them, and you can see in animals that a mother's going to have a certain role, the female's got a certain role, and the male's got a certain role. They may not be the same in every category, right? Some women are especially that they'll eat their young or some kind of stuff. You see spiders doing that, and some women are very protective of those. But regardless, what I'm trying to tell you here is that you can go look in the animal kingdom today and see male and female. And you can write down some defining characteristics about, is this a male or a female? Well, here's how we know. And here are characteristics of a male. I haven't yet seen in a science book where, the general rule is, we call them male and female, but you really never have any idea. And you just be careful when you're talking about that spider, because it could be either one. I mean, you don't know. And it just depends on how it feels that day or how it changed or whatever. Or what is the gender anyway? They haven't even gotten to any of that in the animal kingdom. Animal kingdom, everything's very cut and dry. Now, let me go on a side little tangent here. There are people that are going to say, well, there are some species or things where there's no male or female. They may be asexual. Or even in humans, you may have a different anatomical structure that is an anomaly. Look, that's all 100% true. And we'll talk about exceptions to things, but as a general rule, here's the way genders are designed. They're not designed with there's a man and a woman and a third that's just as equal or whatever. There's all sorts of genetic conditions and problems that are not God-designed or ideal, that are because we're finite beings where we're going to die. And so just like God didn't create in the beginning cancer and all those other things, deformities, God never intended for any of that. All that is brought on when we severed ourselves from God with sin. And so any sort of, again, deformity doesn't change God's original design and the original pattern he has for his species. God wanted male and female animals on the ark. Why? Because male and female animals are going to have other animals. And everybody's going to reproduce after their kind. That's the standard. That's what we're talking about when we think about gender in the beginning. So again, it isn't something Mark came up with. It's like, well, let's just, we'll make gender a big thing. God created it. Adam didn't have a say on it. Man didn't have a say on it. God said, here's your woman, and she's different. That's okay. Y'all are going to be one flesh. And that's how we've lived now for quite a long time. Now, let's turn our attention to gender roles in the Bible. Now that we kind of see that gender is a design created thing by God, let's think a little bit more about how gender roles come across in the Bible. Look, got a lot of verses up here, and I want you to read this, and we've got a lot of things to cover. I got a funny picture of Aunt Bee and Andy Griffith up there. Good wholesome show. For whatever reason, it was on TV the other night. I guess we could watch it. I don't know if it was on Netflix or something. And we decided to watch the very first Andy Griffith episode. I don't know if I've ever watched it. I don't know if Anna's ever watched it. But we watched it. And the kids watched it. And I think they were asking, like, why are things in black and white and all this other stuff. But the whole episode was about Aunt Bee coming into Andy's life. And what a mess it was when Andy's trying to take care of things himself and Opie's trying to fix breakfast and do all this stuff on his own. And, you know, he's burning the toast and all that. And you need Aunt Bee, and at the end of the episode, they really appreciate what she's bringing to the household and what she's doing for the family and taking care of things. Now, again, that is meant to be just, well, almost outdated and antiquated as today's gender roles. But let me tell you, long before any of that, God had set expectations for what these roles were going to be able to accomplish as he created them and designed them. I got Genesis 3 up here. Of course, after the fall, God makes some statements about genders that carry forth and they're true today. To the woman, he said, I will greatly multiply your pain in childbirth. In pain you will bring forth children, yet your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. Then to Adam he said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree about which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat from it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall grow for you. And you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you will eat bread. Till you return to the ground, because from it you were taken. For you are dust, and to dust you shall return. Look, early on, we see two truths that God has given as specific directions that are supposed to be carried out regarding the roles that he created and designed. Number one, God gave the role of childbearing to the woman. Now, I mean, I know that's not necessarily fashionable today. People like to push the bounds of whatever science or medical stuff can do. And, you know, men can take women's hormones and get implanted with things in order to try to have a child and make news and all kind of weird stuff. But look, that's not God's design. God didn't say, one of y'all have a kid. God said, the woman, this is going to be you. Childbirth is going to be your responsibility. It's going to be painful. But in doing so, as we'll read later in 1 Timothy 2, it has something to do with salvation, her fulfilling her role. And God gave the role of working, providing, and taking care of things to eat to the man. And he said, look, things had been good for you. You didn't have to do that. You were sitting around and you were getting food, you were pulling it off the tree, but now the ground's not going to be so kind. And you're going to have to go out there and work hard. You're going to put your hand to the plow, and you're going to have to sweat, and by the sweat of your brow, you're going to eat. So while the woman is there having children, the man is out there working, and that is God's expectation in general for gender roles in the Bible. Now look, let me say this. Men and women are suited for the roles that they've been given. When I say they're suited for the roles they've been given, a woman is designed to bear children. Again, how many of you who have had children, especially as men, understand this truth? That when a child is screaming at 1 o'clock in the morning, and it's your child, you think to yourself, I wish Anna would get up and go out there and take care of things. Right? And I've never once heard Anna say, I'm so sick of this child. Why don't you get over there and do something? No. There is a nature of compassion and care that a tender mother shows for her children. Look, that's God-given. You didn't go read a book that told you to do that. Like, well, I better do that. Right? That is part of who you are. And as far as a man's ability to go out and work, right? God gave them the ability and the strength and the natural physical ability to go out and work that hard ground. He said it's going to be hard. Now, can a woman not go out and work the hard ground? Absolutely she can. Right? Is she going to be as effective as a man in doing this 100% of the time? Look, don't shoot me, but I don't think so. And here's why. God made you different. He designed you different. But we're trying to throw all that out the window. Let me give you one example. I was talking to this with somebody at work whose son is on the wrestling team. Well, now they've got it where it's kind of one-sided if you just wrestle other guys. So now they let girls wrestle against boys on the men's wrestling team. So she said, the ladies tell me this, and you know, she's not a preacher at church or anything. She just gave me her complete perspective. She's like, look, let me be honest, it's awkward. It's awkward. My son's over there, and he's grabbing a girl, and he doesn't, you know, he's not comfortable with this. I mean, they're in between having cooties and wanting to marry him, and it's just this, you know. And I was like, well, look, let's get down to it. Did he win? She was like, oh, he killed her. Same weight class, but she's like, he's just stronger. And that, look, again, that is the way God designed. It's not anything offensive. This is what it is. And when you see God's roles for people, you understand that God are making them suited for the roles that he's given them. And when we try to go against the grain of that, that's when we run into all kind of awkward problems. And we'll talk more about that later on. Turn your Bibles to 1 Corinthians, if you will. And I want you to understand this hierarchy that God made between the genders. We won't spend a bunch of time on it. It's not the point of the lesson. I got verse 13, but it's really verse 3. But when you read 1 Corinthians 11, he said, look, there's something I want you to know. I want you to understand that Christ is the head of every man, and the man is the head of a woman, and God is the head of Christ. I mean, if there's anything you can take away from this tonight, it's that I want everybody to understand you are subject in your role to somebody. Whether you're a woman and God has placed you here on the totem pole, or you're a man and God has placed you here on the totem pole, none of us can escape this truth that we are below someone. Now, that's not an ideal thing in today's society. We don't want to be below anybody. I want to be on par. I want to be level. I really want to be at the top. We'll talk about that in the next slide. But none of us are going to be on the top. God's on the top. And even Jesus humbled himself below God, right? Well, okay. Well, yeah, he didn't consider it something that, you can go read Philippians 2, something he needed to grasp or hold on to. He humbled himself, taking on the form of a servant. So when God asks us to have some sort of role of servitude, whether man to Christ or woman to man, well, we shouldn't balk at that at all. He made us, he designed us, and he set up the roles. But notice why he set up these roles this way. The fall had a lot to do with it. You can read in 1 Timothy chapter 2, if you wonder why gender roles in the Bible are different, well, he explains it. He said, for it was Adam who was first created, then Eve. And it was not Adam who was deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression. But women will be preserved through the bearing of children if they continue in faith and love and sanctity with self-restraint. All right, so what's the problem? Well, why did God arbitrarily decide to put a woman in subjection to a man in his hierarchy of gender roles? Well, he explains it. I made Adam first, so there's some order of preeminence. And secondly, the woman sinned. She sinned first. So she got two strikes against her. It's not that she's not going to be saved, which, again, we'll cover. But as far as God's concerned, your gender role is going to be different because of these things. Now, we'll take a minute and say, people will look at this and they'll go, well, that was just first century type things, and that was their culture and society. He didn't say a word about that. Did he say one word about your culture? Did he say, no, women need to be subjective because, well, that's just how women should be in the first century. No, he said this goes all the way back to where he said, look, a woman's desire is going to be for the man, and he's going to rule over you. Well, in what sense does he rule over her? God gave him authority as a man to be able to exercise that authority in that role and in that relationship. Now, again, is that offensive to people? Well, yes, it's offensive. But I think, as we'll get there, that's a problem. I don't want to leave without mentioning this last bullet. We'll cover it more fully on the last slide. But you may be saying here, look, I know these are the general rules, but what about this situation that I know about where there's this guy that I know, and it's just hypothetical, but maybe he's got three kids, and his wife's expecting twins, and she's real sick, and so she doesn't do any of that stuff that says about her role, taking care of the home, and all this stuff, and he's there doing that. I saw him doing dishes the other day, and Clint doing the laundry. Look, there are circumstances in our lives where our roles are going to be all over the place. If I'm injured, and I'm unable to work, and Anna's got to go out and do what she needs to do to take care of the family, then praise God for that. That's her responsibility to take care of the family. And if something happened to her, and I got to do mom's job for the kids and do all this stuff that I'm maybe not as qualified for, then praise God, I'm got the strength to do that. I'm going to get out there and do it. But just because people like to focus on the exceptions, that does not negate or undermine God's general pattern. And when it's possible for us to follow God's general pattern, that's what we ought to be doing. If there's some extenuating circumstances, well, those can be addressed. But if we're just lazy and don't want to do it, well, that's not the kind of exceptions that we're talking about. All right, let's get to the next one. When we're talking about gender in the first place, I think it really raises a point which isn't, the problem isn't necessarily gender. I think the problem that we deal with a lot of times is the problem of pride. If you want to turn back with me to Numbers chapter 12, I just want to read a couple Old Testament examples that I think really serve to highlight the flawed nature of man. And when I say the flawed nature of man, we've always had these type struggles where people are unhappy with their roles, but it's not really been necessarily gender related. You can't go find this stuff, you know, in the Old Testament where people are trying to use the same bathroom and that kind of stuff. You're not going to find those examples, but what you will find are plenty of people that have a different role that are unhappy with their role. And you also see, by the way, how God feels about that. In Numbers chapter 12, you get some people in trouble that you wouldn't expect to be in trouble. You get the story of Miriam and Aaron. In verse 1, it says they spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman he'd married. Or he'd married a Cushite woman. They said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us as well? And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very humble, more than any man who was on the face of the earth. Suddenly the Lord said to Moses and Aaron and to Miriam, you three, come out to the tent of meeting. So the three of them came out. Then the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the doorway of the tent, and he called Aaron and Miriam. And when they both come forward, he said, hear now my words. If there's a prophet among you, I, the Lord, shall make myself known to him in a vision. I shall speak with him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my household. With him, I speak mouth to mouth, even openly and not in dark sayings. And he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? I want you to take a step back and think about our society today. Our society, the number one thing people feel zero guilt about is running their mouth about what they think. Now, I want you to think about this for a minute. Miriam didn't assassinate Moses. Miriam didn't go out there and go on some tirade. She's just having what we would consider a very normal conversation. Who does Moses think he is? Well, guess what? God hears that stuff. And God says, I need to see you in my office right now. And they come out there to meet God. And God said, you know what? Yeah, I communicate with a lot of people. A lot of people get visions. A lot of people get these dark sayings. They wake up and they're like, I don't know what any of this means. That's not how I deal with Moses. I go talk to Moses like you talk to your friend. Now, because I've got that kind of special relationship with Moses, do you not feel the least bit bad wondering why he's in charge? You don't feel the least bit whatever? And here's humble Moses, meekest man on the earth. He's not even doing anything. So she's going to get punished. When the cloud withdrew from the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous as white as snow. And Aaron turned toward Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. That's a bad thing. Okay? That's separating you from the family. That's cutting you off. All of a sudden, you got something bad. Why? Because her attitude was one that I'm tired of this person getting all the glory, and I want to be in charge. You see, it carried over in Numbers chapter 16. We've preached on this in the past. We won't read it in detail. But the attitude that Korah had. They rose up before Moses, verse 2, together with some of the sons of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, chosen in the assembly, men of renown. And they assembled together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, you have gone far enough. For all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is in their midst. So why do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord? Same thing. Same thing. They're like, who are you? We're all in this together. You're not any more special than any of us. We all are equal people. Why do you take some position of leadership that I can't have? And Moses said in verse 8 to Korah, hear now, sons of Levi, is it not enough for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the rest of the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself? To do the service of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to minister to them? And that he has brought you near, Korah, and all your brothers, sons of Levi, with you. And are you seeking for the priesthood also? Therefore, you and all your company are gathered together against the Lord. But as for Aaron, who is he that you grumble against him? You see the problem of pride. If you want, just again, a fun reading, you haven't read it in a while, just keep reading. Yeah, things get really bad. And they get bad for the people that grumble and complain. But you know what? The same thing is true today. Today, this is what we're seeing. People look at genders, and they look at some established traditional values or views, and they say, you know what? This doesn't make me happy. Because I am on the outside of whatever it is somebody else has. And I shouldn't be on the outside of that. I should be able to do anything and everything I want. And you see two clear biblical examples of people with really the same attitude. And what happens, are y'all controlling this, trying to get me through this thing quick? Number two, look, when that happens, Moses calls them out what's really going on. And this is so true with people today. Of all the freedoms and abilities and the good life people in America have, you would blow your mind to think that everybody's miserable, but they are. Everybody here in America, again, greatest land of the free, whatever, they're unhappy. Right? Everybody's a victim of somebody. Everybody's being held down. Everybody's got something to complain about and something that they need. And this is a land of injustice. And we can't put up with it anymore. It's just like Korah. Moses is like, you know what? When it comes to the Israelites, you guys are pretty special. You're from Levi. You were pulled out separate and special to God. And you get to do things that the other tribes don't even get to do. Now, not everybody in Levi was a priest. But he said, is that what you want? I mean, are you wanting to attack Aaron and the priesthood too? Are you just wanting to do Aaron's job? Yes, we're all holy. Yes, we're all special. But why are you yelling at us about this? You know the reason. Well, the reason ultimately is pride. That's what it is. Pride is seen in the same argumentation today about gender roles when people just want and demand more. Look, I'm going to tell you, and I don't mean this flippantly, but I just think it's funny. I've been to Boy Scouts. All right, me and my dad made the wooden car, and you race it down the track. You know, I made a leather canoe, I think. Maybe it was miniature. I don't know what I was supposed to do with it. But you can do that at home. You don't have to be in Boy Scouts. You can go camp anywhere you want in the country today. There's no Boy Scouts have a special campsite that, like, is the most beautiful place on earth and nobody can go to. You can go hang out with your dad every weekend if you want. You can hang out with brothers. We can all go camp if you want to go camp, right? But the attitude that people have is, I just want that one thing that you said I can't do. And the only thing that comes from is not a need, but a prideful, arrogant desire. We're not happy in our station. I'm not happy until I
have it all.
Let me say this. As you go back to God, and you go back to the authority that God has the ability to give whatever role He chooses to whoever He chooses. But I think today, again, with how horrific our society is, and the arrogance and the pride and the self-centeredness that we have, if God gave men the ability to have children, women would complain about that. And vice versa. We just want to do what we can't do. But brethren, that shows your heart, stiff-necked, arrogant, prideful attitude, and not the humility that God is trying to give you, the humility that's necessary to ever yield yourself to obedience to God and be a servant. You're never going to be a servant. Life is all about you when pride is at stake. Now, let me transition this, because I don't think it would be good for us to leave without talking about this just honestly. Look, we've talked a little bit about gender roles, and if you want to turn to some of those passages, we may read them, we may not for time's sake. But I recognize that in the history of traditional gender roles, that there's been, as I've titled up here, an abuse of power. And when I say an abuse of power, I mean, I got a picture up here of women's suffrage in the early 1900s. And because of them standing up for their rights to be able to vote, because again, only men could vote, women now have the ability to do something which you would probably take for granted, that women can vote. Now, when we think about the abuse of power, I will say and admit and acknowledge that mankind, in whatever little bit of authority God has given us on earth, has a history of abusing it. And that doesn't mean just men. I'm not just trying to talk about men, mankind in general. You got any sort of influence over somebody, you crush them under your boot heel. You see the Jews doing that in Israel. You go read about Amos, and it's like you'll take things from the poor people. Why would you steal from a widow? Well, just because you can and you got the ability to do that. I will acknowledge that going back to the good old days doesn't mean necessarily that we do everything the way it was done 400 years ago. I will acknowledge the failings of mankind and that we have done a good job of repressing and suppressing anybody for our own personal pride and doing things for ourselves. Is it wrong for women to have been given the right to vote? I don't think that's wrong at all. I will challenge you that from a Christian standpoint, that Christianity has a very high view of women. When I say that, you can go look with me in John chapter 4. You remember the story of the woman at the well? We won't talk necessarily about the gospel in the story, but I want to talk about the viewpoint that man has versus the viewpoint that God has about women. The disciples are hungry. They're going into the place to get food. They go to get food, but what does Jesus do? He's got food they don't know about. His food is to do the will of the one who sent him. And that's what Jesus did. It involved a conversation with a woman. And in that dialogue, he's going to end up getting a whole town connected with God and connected with the gospel. But notice what the disciples say at this point when they come back. They were amazed that he had been speaking with a woman. Yet no one said, "What do you seek?" or "Why do you speak with her?" You know, to them, this was just an opportunity that they would not expect to take. Why would I talk to a woman, much less a Samaritan woman? Now, is that the general traditional viewpoint, that women should be over here in the corner and men are doing this thing and we don't even acknowledge you? Well, maybe that's how people used to be, but that's not how our Lord and Savior was. What people were always with Jesus? Well, yes, 12 apostles, but it seemed like he was real good friends with Mary and Martha too. It seems like he had a real soft spot in his ministry for women. Seems like when he had an opportunity to stone one, he didn't. As a matter of fact, when Paul talks about the church, he doesn't go on some pro-male rant and say, "Look, I got a list of people that helped me in the gospel, and it's all just 100 guys." Well, that's not it. You go look in the Hall of Fame, who is he saying? He said, "Look, man, you take care of Phoebe. She's been taking care of me. You help Euodia and Syntyche in Philippians 4 because they've helped me in the ministry." Look, there are godly women out there that are going to share the exact same reward that you and I will. It doesn't matter. When we get to heaven, there's not going to be a crown for men and then a little crown for women. That's not how it works. That's the beauty of the gospel, is that whether we're slave or free, Jew or Greek, male or female, we are all one in Christ, but that does not mean that we don't have different functions. And it doesn't mean we don't have different roles. Let me challenge you on this. That when we attack the roles that we've been given, we don't attack men, we attack God. You're telling God, oh, you mean a woman can't preach? Even Amelia gets that. I joke with her. I was like, she's like, who's preaching tonight? You're preaching. I can't preach. Well, she's learned that early on. All right? Not that she wouldn't have anything to say. She'll talk your ear off. But regarding the God's plan for things, go back and read 1 Timothy 2. I want to follow that. I don't want to attack that. I'm not trying to attack God. And look, you can help God's kingdom in whatever way and whatever function that you have. I think it's so funny because 90% of the time we get this. Again, try it tomorrow. Go to work and tell your boss you're feeling discriminated against because they're on the other side of that seat. I need your office, buddy, because I'm just as man as you are. And they're going to be like, well, that's not your role. You can, here's a box, get your things and get out of here. Okay? I can't go be the CEO of AT&T tomorrow. Why is that? Does that mean I'm a horrible person? No. Does that mean I'm a bad dad? No. Does that mean I'm not going to get a paycheck? No. It means I got a different function. And when someone tells me something, I don't just get mad and be like, I'm oppressed at work. No, I'm happy to have a job. And the same thing's true in the football team. We get this. Same thing in the military. What if everybody went up to the captain and were like, well, that's real nice on the stars you got. Why don't I just take those? We should all have the same amount of stars. That's not how it works. In every other place, we recognize I got a different function, I got a different role, and I'm still a valued member of the team from the lowest level private to the highest level commander-in-chief. And yet, why can't we grasp that in other areas? Well, why do we have to knock heads about gender roles in God's kingdom? Why do we got to push and prod in other parts of our life so we can have some kind of thing because we feel like it's owed to us? Look, I'll acknowledge, and what I wanted to say in this slide is that wrong should be righted, whether it's women's votes or whatever. But that shouldn't be taken in the other direction where you're undermining things that shouldn't be touched. There's a far cry in repenting from where we've been wrong and then going in the other direction and being wrong in what we do. That's a hard line, but one we need to stand behind. All right, last slide. I want to take a minute and just talk about 21st century gender roles. Then, well, where does that put us? I thought about reading Proverbs 31. I didn't want to make y'all feel super bad, but you know the story. Worthy woman, okay? Great, great lady. But it's not just your typical type situation where the woman is necessarily Aunt B. All right, her goal in life is not just making cookies when you come home from work and then making breakfast in the morning. That can be part of a role, but that's not necessarily representative of everything God thinks a godly woman is doing. I mean, when you read these things, you start to piece it together and understand maybe it's a lot broader than the traditional value, but let me take it in another direction. Number one, I want to say this again. Your gender is the whatever biological assignment you were given at birth. All right, it isn't a feeling or a thought. It's something God created, and they just were. If Adam felt like a woman, he was still a man. If Eve felt like a man, she's still a woman. I mean, that doesn't matter, right? God assigned them, created them, and gave them those things. And that's what your biological assignment is. And society has zero bearing on what God has done. It doesn't matter. Now, we feel bad because we look like idiots to the world. But we just got to take a stand for this kind of stuff. Right, we got to honor what God and people have been honoring for just thousands of years. And don't let society push and change on God's expectation for things. But look, let me say this. You can still blur all the roles and responsibilities you have, but you still got the same God-given expectation and responsibility. Let me say what I mean by this. Look, today, we don't have the traditional jobs and makeups and things that people had even 100 years ago. When I say that, a woman's role in the home and a man's role to work and provide for his family is just very different. I can be at home some days more than Anna is because I'm working at home. You know, I got a laptop and got a computer and I'm there. Anna gets up and goes to do something with you ladies and goes out there and does the church. Does that mean she's abdicated her role in some way? Well, no, not necessarily. But a man that had to go drive cattle for 300 miles and then, you know, tell you I'll be back home in 2 weeks. Like Little House on the Prairie, right? It doesn't have to be that way. And it's not that way. Now look, women as well, right? You might say to yourself, with all the modern conveniences that I've got, I'm not down there scrubbing, I'm not bringing water up in a pitcher on my head, I'm not having to go kill the chicken and pluck the feathers and do all that stuff. I can do the same thing my mom did. I can do it in 2 hours. So is there a problem for me to work? Look, you go read Proverbs 31. That lady's working all the time. All right, whether it was inside the home or going and considering a field and buying it or going to do all those things, I'm not attacking a woman going outside and providing some way for her family. Amelia, it was just insightful the other day. She was talking to me and she said, what if everything was just free and you could just take whatever you want? And you just go to Walmart and you just take it, and you go to the grocery store and you just take it. I was like, well, people wouldn't produce anything if they didn't get anything for it. And so I tried to explain to her that money is a commodity that really is valueless, but we assign value to it for goods and services. And then she was tuned out and dug in something out the window. But it was a good question, right? I mean, when you think about a woman working, all she's doing is making money so she can do the things that the worthy woman had done in the past, right? So as far as sewing clothes, well, you could sit there for an hour and sew clothes. You can go work for an hour and sew clothes, make 10 bucks and go buy three things of clothes, right? It's better sometimes to have money than it is to try to provide your own goods and services. I get that. But let me say this. It does not lessen God's expectation for you to take care of your family at home. It doesn't change. So you know what? Just like the worthy woman, your lamp may not go out at night. You may be up all night taking care of things because you were gone some during the day. And look, as a man, you still got other things that you got to do. Maybe you can work at home. Maybe you're independently wealthy. Look, the bottom line is this. Both parents in a godly home are going to have to be industrious. They're going to have to be loving their family. They're going to have to be teaching them when they rise up, when they lie down, and when they're on the way. And they're going to have to be focused on raising their children and taking care of things. Now how you accomplish that and do that, like there's some gray area there and respect for that. But at the end of the day, a woman is suited to raise children, bear children, and keep the home, and a man is suited to provide for that. But at the end of the day, you all better be doing everything in your power to love, teach, admonish, correct, and raise a godly home. And it really takes both people. It doesn't mean a man can go to work and be like, I'm doing that thing that God said I'm supposed to do. I just provide, and I go home, and the wife just is shouldering 99% of things. That's not how it works either. Right, we're all in this together, but we all need to respect what God has done. Don't get undermined by this trap of gender roles. Respect what God has given you and humbly just fill that role. You know, some days you may say to yourself, I would much rather be home with the kids. Take a day and do that. You'll be back at work the next day. It's no place you want to be. And the same thing's true with Anna. Anna's like, I'm looking for a job. It's not easy, no matter what role you're given. But man, you put in the time, you serve God, God's going to reward you for that service. And what a great thing. That if we keep sowing, we're going to reap if we faint not. Man, you can go back and read Galatians 6, 9, and 10 all day and just continue to do good for the people that need it. Continue to be the kind of godly example you need to be, and God's going to take care of you when the time comes. I invite you to turn your life over to Him tonight. If you're not a Christian, whatever way that you failed Him, you can make that right tonight as we stand and sing a song to encourage you.